Core Facts is science. Core Facts is quick. Core Facts is every weekday. Core Facts is, why are some lakes full of algae and thick plants? How can I stop a male cardinal from repeatedly hitting my window? Does the USGS monitor global warming? What was the biggest earthquake in the United States? How many glaciers are in Alaska? What can we do to protect ourselves from avian influenza? What is volcanic ash? How can I get real-time stream flow information? What is gas hydrate? What is El Nino and what are its effects? What are some positive products from volcanoes? How have tsunamis affected the United States? What is Landsat 7? How can I find digital map data? Do minerals produce the color in fireworks? What was the biggest landslide in the world? What is the brown marsh phenomenon? How are dinosaurs named? What is the ring of fire? Core Facts is short on time and big on science. Core Facts is coming February 4th. To subscribe, go to usgs.gov/podcasts.
Welcome, and thanks for listening to the USGS Corecast. I'm Jennifer LaVista. The USGS has identified the major agricultural practices in 9 states that contribute to the majority of nutrients in the northern Gulf of Mexico. Today, we are joined by USGS hydrologist Richard Alexander. Richard will tell us about the findings of the study, why nutrients are such a concern, and what can be done to address these nutrient problems in the Gulf. Richard, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Now, first off, tell me about some of the major findings in the study.
Sure, Jen. Agricultural practices are what we found are the principal sources of nitrogen and phosphorus of the Gulf. In fact, they contribute about 70% of both the nitrogen and phosphorus. We found that urban sources, on the other hand, contribute only about 10% of those nutrients. With regard to the agricultural sources, we found that much of the nitrogen comes from corn and soybeans. There's a very large corn belt within the Mississippi River Basin, where about 80% of the corn in the United States is actually grown. Nitrogen tends to be fairly mobile in the environment because it's in a dissolved form, and so it readily runs off from these types of lands and inner streams. By contrast to this, though, when we looked at phosphorus, what we found is that animals and pasture and range really matter quite a bit within the Mississippi Basin. We found that phosphorus in the animal manure is nearly as important a contributor as cultivated row crops. By comparison, we found that about 37% of the phosphorus that enters the Gulf comes from pasture and rangeland, animal manure on those lands, compared to about a little more than 40% from the row crops. These contributions of phosphorus from animal manure is larger, really, than previously recognized, and they suggest that perhaps more management attention to animals on pasture land may be needed.
So what might explain that difference?
Well, some of the factors that may explain it include phosphorus enrichment in the waste itself. Animals don't absorb phosphorus as readily as nitrogen, so that may lead to greater phosphorus in the rivers and streams. Also, animals compact the soil when they tread around on the soils and in paddocks. And animal wading in streams may introduce waste directly to the streams. By contrast, on row crops, there's a lot of use of conservation tillage, which may hold up the phosphorus and not allow it to run off as readily, which may raise the importance of pasture lands as a source within the basin.
Okay, so where in the Mississippi River Basin are these nutrients coming from?
Well, most of the nitrogen and phosphorus come from the central parts and eastern parts of the Mississippi Basin. These are areas where a lot of the agricultural land is located. There are also large cities that are located on the major rivers, such as the Ohio and the upper parts of the Mississippi. And there are a lot of nutrients that come from the wastewater treatment plants from those cities. One of the interesting findings is that only about a third of the drainage area contributes more than about 3/4 of the nitrogen and phosphorus to the Gulf. And this area, consisting of about a third of the drainage, covers a 9-state area throughout the Mississippi Basin.
What are those states?
Well, it includes Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Arkansas, and Kentucky, as well as Tennessee, Ohio, and Mississippi, are all in this major contributing region of the Mississippi.
Are there any other factors besides land use that contribute to nutrients in the Gulf?
Well, there is an interesting factor other than land use, and that is the river network itself is very important. The streams, rivers, the reservoirs all have an important impact on nutrient delivery to the Gulf. These central and eastern parts of the basins that contribute so much of the nitrogen and phosphorus are, in fact, drained by very large rivers. These large rivers are where very little nitrogen and phosphorus are naturally removed. And so this helps explain why the nutrients are delivered from really far upstream within the basin. Over thousands of miles, nutrients can be transported with relatively little loss. The rivers also connect to smaller streams that in some cases are linked to tile drain systems, which are put in underneath corn and soybean and other types of crops. And so that helps to connect the nutrients where they're applied to the land and helps connect them to further downstream where they ultimately end up in terms of the Gulf.
Okay. Now, tell me about why are these nutrients of such a concern in the Gulf?
Well, the nutrients that we're talking about here are both nitrogen and phosphorus, which we've mentioned before. They're essential elements that are required for the organisms to really live. The entire food web, from very large fish to small organisms, all require nitrogen and phosphorus to survive. But too much of a good thing can lead to a problem in the Gulf of Mexico. An overabundance of these elements can lead to hypoxia.
So what is hypoxia?
Okay, hypoxia basically is a condition of low dissolved oxygen in the water. All of these organisms that live in the Gulf require, just like we do, oxygen in order to sustain themselves. The problem is when you have an overabundance of nutrients, you can get excessive growth of these algae in the Gulf. And what happens when they go through their normal life cycle and the algae die, bacteria feed on the dead algal cells, which requires oxygen, and so that can strip the oxygen out of the water. One of the concerns here is that this can cause quite a bit of stress on the ecosystem, in particular the bottom-dwelling organisms, because that's where the oxygen is typically used up first. And the other issue is that poses a threat to economic and ecological health of the estuary. And in fact, the Gulf is one of the nation's most productive fisheries.
So how big is the hypoxic zone in the Gulf?
Well, in 2007, the hypoxic zone was about 8,000 square kilometers, and that's about the size of the state of Massachusetts.
Wow.
That's the third largest hypoxic area since 1985, and that's when scientists first began taking measurements. Since then, hypoxia occurs each year, typically during the summer months, the June, July, August time frame, sometime in that period. And it's shown fairly large increases since 1985, and also just fluctuations, large fluctuations from year to year.
Now, does this occur anywhere else in the U.S. or in the globe?
Yes, it's an interesting question. Actually, hypoxia has been occurring around the world in a number of estuaries over the last several decades, similar to what we've observed in the Gulf of Mexico. These are typically shallow estuaries, typically have very large river inflows to these. They're dominated often by freshwater inflows. And this often leads to setting up the conditions that are required to create hypoxic conditions. Coincidentally, both the Gulf and globally, there have been large increases in the river nutrients that flow into these estuaries.
And why is that?
Well, what's happened over the past several decades is that population, obviously, has increased in the U.S. and globally by quite a bit, and this population requires food in order to survive. And so there's been particularly an increase in the use of farm fertilizers to sustain that population. At the same time, there have also been many more vehicles on the road, power plant emissions. All of those emit nitrogen to the atmosphere, which is deposited into watersheds and can run off into rivers. So that's another source for nitrogen that's considered to be important as well.
So tell me a little bit about how this study was conducted.
Sure. I could give you a few details about the model and how we did the study. We used a watershed model called Sparrow to describe how the water and the nutrients travel through the watershed to the Gulf from different types of land uses within the basin. The model describes the landscape actually in half square mile pieces, if you can imagine that. These are all located in relation to the nearest receiving river or reservoir, which are all connected together in a river network that consists of about 600,000 miles of streams within the United States.
So that covers a lot of ground.
It does. It's a very big model, and it makes use of a lot of geospatial information that's collected by the federal government and other entities in the U.S. What we use the model to provide is a basic geographic framework for really understanding water flow and nutrient movement, but really to obtain reliable estimates of nutrient delivery to the Gulf and also information about the nutrient sources. The model depends pretty heavily upon having this detailed spatial measurements and data that I referred to. This includes a variety of sources. One of them includes USGS measurements of nutrients and stream flow in rivers. These are taken at selected locations on rivers within the basin and over long periods of time. We also use in the model and combine with these USGS measurements a lot of geospatial data on land use, which is based on satellite measurements. And so it's an incredible set of individual pieces of data that when we bring them together in a watershed model, they really provide a lot of interesting insight into where the nutrients originate from and ultimately their fate, where they end up, such as the Gulf of Mexico.
Now that we have these findings, what can be done about this problem?
Well, one of the things that's under consideration is setting more stringent nutrient reduction goals for the Mississippi River Basin. The Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force has the lead for setting these reduction goals. This is a federal and state effort to better manage nutrients in the basin. The task force is currently considering reduction goals for both nitrogen and phosphorus of 45%, which they'd like to try to achieve by 2015. And this is part of an effort to try to reduce the size of the hypoxic zone by half, also by 2015.
Were there any reduction goals previously set for nitrogen and phosphorus?
Well, a reduction goal was set for nitrogen by the task force in 2001. They set a goal of reducing nitrogen by 30% by 2015. However, this is the first time that a reduction goal is being considered for phosphorus. So one of the useful pieces of information from our study is the new focus on phosphorus. The study provides useful information to the task force and the states about the important sources of phosphorus in the basin. Studies like this also are helpful to scientists and researchers to really help define what the next step are. They help to identify what the data gaps are. Some exist currently in monitoring information, for example, or networks have declined over the past couple of decades. And it can also help to identify other important pieces of information, like the agricultural sources and the best management practices that are being used within the watershed.
Well, great. Anything you'd like to add?
That's all.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Richard. It's been really great.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of CoreCast. You can find out more information about nutrient delivery to the Gulf by visiting water.usgs.gov/NAWQA/sparrow/gulf_findings. CoreCast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior. Until next time, I'm Jennifer LaVista.